What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Full Court Press. On today's show, we've got some awards to give out. The NBA season is coming to a conclusion, so we will take a look at the NBA playoffs and where some teams project and how they're going to end up doing. So to my left, as always, Mr. Matt Hayes.
Hello, hello.
And to my right, Mr. Josh Lewinberg.
How's it going, JB?
And right as we pass the famous Crispy.
Oh, you gave us a little wave, Crispinator. Too.
Oh, there, just went by the booth. So, I feel like Crispy's always a part of the booth, but he's, you know, you feel like Crispy's always a part of you?
He's Josh? Our sixth man. His presence is being felt at all times.
Yeah, I'd say so. So, we as always, we will start off the show with a little segment we like to call Apologies, and that is where each of us, if we have anything to apologize for, that is, will make an apology for something missed or missaid the previous week. So, as always, we'll stick it with Matt Hayes. What do you got, Matty?
Well, this week I have a bit of an acknowledgement and an apology all at once. First, I'd like to acknowledge the Texas A&M Aggies Women's Division I NCAA Champions for winning the D1 Champions. And in doing so, I want to apologize to the Windsor Lancers, whose women won the national title here in Canada for basketball, and we chose to ignore them completely. I have a lot of friends who play women's basketball, and I apologize to them.
Are they all women?
And they are. They are. And
everyone?
I apologize. Well, I said women's basketball.
Yeah, but you don't know a Juwanna Man type player?
Not offhand.
Oh, fine.
But either way, Windsor.
Terrible movie.
You got anything to be sorry for?
I apologize on behalf of whoever made Juwanna Man.
Yeah, I'm sorry for referencing Juwanna Man.
My apology is actually directed towards Matt Hayes this week.
Oh, yes.
Matt, I'm sorry I underestimated UConn. I'm sorry I underestimated Kemba. I'm sorry I thought they'd be tired. They weren't tired.
They really weren't tired.
They weren't tired. I'm sorry. But aside from that, I'm not sorry for shit.
Yeah, I'm going to have to double up with Josh Lewinberg on this one and give my apology to Matt. I'm sorry, Matt. Should have never done it. Shouldn't have bet on Butler. Won't happen again. Huskies, baby. Huskies.
That was probably the most touching moment I've had on this show yet.
Did you enjoy that? You did?
More than you'll ever know.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's good for you. There's other things going on that are going to be good for some other players, though. Some awards that are going to be handed out. We got MVPs.
Some bling.
Some shiny
trophies.
Ooh.
And this year, it doesn't look like the MVP trophy is going to go to LeBron James, or at least it doesn't seem that way.
Ooh, good. Time will tell.
Thoughts on that?
Thoughts on that are, as you know, every opportunity I got throughout the season to discount what Derrick Rose has done, I've taken that opportunity. Early on in the season, I was all over Amari Stoudemire, giving him some love in a potential MVP race. That obviously deteriorated, let's say. I was throwing some love at Dwight Howard, who we'll talk about coming up. But it's getting harder and harder to discount what Derrick Rose has done in Chicago. Just kind of holding that team together despite what they've gone through with Noah's injury, with Boozer's injury. He's been great. Every ounce of what he's done offensively, defensively, he's added the three ball to his game this year.
Defensively,
the team has been great.
The team's been great.
And he's their floor general. He's not the best defensive point guard in the league, but he's not the worst defensive point guard in the league. But this isn't Defensive Player of the Year. This is MVP, and as much as I hate to say it, Derrick Rose is the MVP.
Yeah, I like Derrick Rose a lot, too. I think that he's the only guy on that offense that can create his own shot, which is, of course, invaluable to them. And if you look at, I think there were 60 games missed in between Boozer and Noah this season, so that obviously goes very well towards his nomination for MVP. The only thing for me is, again, is the efficiency on Rose is a little bit shaky. And this year, in general, just kind of feels like a year where we have an MVP by almost default, where Rose seems to be the player of the season, but hasn't quite had what you would consider a regular MVP type season.
You gotta like that he's earning the respect of his peers, that all these guys are coming out, whether it be coaches, players on other teams, and saying, yeah, he's the MVP, he's earned it.
But he still struggles a little bit from the, he has improved, but he still struggles from the free throw line. He's still not the most efficient player. He does turn the ball over a little bit.
That might be the scariest part there, is there's room for improvement with Derrick Rose.
86% from the free throw line is not bad.
It's not terrible, but it's also not MVP-like.
Really?
I don't think so. Not from point guard. for me, if you're a small forward, but not as a shooter.
86% is pretty damn good.
All right, fine. I'll give him that. Still though, his efficiency not that fantastic. And again, he's the worst offensive player on the best defensive unit.
I don't give him the MVP anyways.
Which I think that handicaps. Who do you got, Matty?
I got a fellow big man down in Orlando, Dwight Howard.
Oh, you got D.
Howard. Speaking of defense,
and isn't that part of being a most valuable player? You're valuable on both ends of the floor.
Well, yeah, he's definitely, I think,
he completely changes every game he's in. He completely changes the other team's entire game plan on both ends of the floor.
How's his free throw shooting, Giannis?
It's terrible.
I mean, he doesn't have to shoot a good free throw percentage.
It's the center, though. There's a difference between the center and the point guard, right?
He gets you 14 rebounds a game, and he holds down the paint like no other.
Oh, I think there's no question about that. We won't even go over defensive MVP, I don't think, unless other than right now saying D-How is the lock.
Oh, yeah. I want to stick on MVP actually for just one second because I want to play devil's advocate to the Dwight Howard because I do believe that Dwight Howard has had a great year and we'll talk about him as a potential defensive player as well. But when we talk about MVP kind of being the most valuable, a leader to their team, how about the fact that he's had so much trouble almost containing his emotions and he's had his technical foul issues this year? We're seeing a lot of immaturity from Dwight even at this stage in his career.
If you played on the Orlando Magic and you were the only guy playing defense every single night, I think you'd kind of start to feel the same way.
You got to look at how people defend him too. He is just assaulted underneath the rim day in and day out. That's going to wear on your emotions. As a guy who's played in the post a lot of years, you get hacked so often.
Still though, you didn't see those kind of reactions from Shaquille O'Neal and Shaq. Yeah, Shaq, the absolutely. Hack of Shaq was employed to a much higher degree than you see what Dwight Howard gets.
Performance is one thing, and obviously a crucial thing, but there's a certain level of maturity and leadership that I think is associated with that MVP award, and I still think he has to grow a lot as a leader.
That being said, he's now got 18 technical fouls, correct? That's where he's at? He's going to be missing a game against Charlotte. So you look at the caliber of the games that he's actually missed because of these suspensions. They haven't been the most important of ones. Like, Orlando's locked in now at their spot. Dwight's been amazing for them, but the technicals haven't really come in a time where it's hurt.
It doesn't matter. You have
the
to
playoffs,
be, you
however.
Have to. You, every game is important, whether there are more important games or less important games. I'm not going to argue that, but as a leader, as an MVP, you have to be there for your team, and you can't be getting thrown out of games. You can't be a distraction to your team on or off the court, and I can't say with confidence that he's been able to do that this year.
This is part of the reason, though, that I actually really enjoy seasons like this where there is no clear-cut MVP by the All-Star break. We've seen in the last couple seasons LeBron James absolutely run away with the award and not make people give maybe a second thought to the other elite stars and what they're doing in this game. This year, though, you do have a situation where you have to take a look at every team and how they're doing and who's got the true most valuable player.
That being said, you got to give LeBron a little bit of props for what he's done this year.
Oh, most certainly.
He's going to get some votes. Why? Look at his stats.
I understand that. The team has underachieved.
Oh, they've underachieved, but that's because the billing for this team was put at, I think, at the beginning of the season, they had Dan Le Batard and Michael Wilbon betting on that.
Yeah.
To have them lose 10 games. Like, come on. The expectations were unreal for
these
guys.
They were
unreal. Giannis, yes. The
Any
expectations,
realistic fan
yes.
knew that this was this is where they were going to finish around.
Yes, the expectations were huge. But, the fact that they did not surpass the record set by the Cleveland Cavaliers last year, it is, in my mind, the reason why LeBron is not an MVP candidate, because you go to a team where you were complaining that you didn't have enough talent to win, you go to a team where you have more than enough talent to win, and they haven't done better than that Cleveland Cavaliers
team.
Well,
we'll see in the playoffs, really. That'll be the true testament,
yes.
Because if they get past
the
third round of playoffs,
MVP,
they go to an
MVP has nothing to do with the playoffs. It's regular season. We're talking about his regular season
as
performance.
As Dirk Nowitzki knows.
I was just saying he was going to get some votes. I didn't think he should
get
it.
Get
I still
votes.
Think Dwight Howard should get it.
Oh, he'll certainly get some votes. And again, I'm not of the belief that he should win the award outright, but again, I don't think that expectations should go hand in hand with this award. I think that LeBron, if you look at his resume this season, everybody thought, we want to talk expectations. The expectation was that his numbers were going to really take a dive. Every statistical category this guy was having was supposed to take a massive dip playing beside D-Wade and Chris Bosh. And so far, what we've seen is nothing to that sort. And in fact, all we have observed is that LeBron James is by far the best player on that
you
team.
You say that expectations shouldn't be considered, but they are. That's a fact. The fact that Derrick Rose is the front runner has absolutely 100% everything to do with expectations.
Agreed.
Because Chicago is not expected to be the best team in the East, and maybe the best team in the league if they can match San Antonio.
Team.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so the fact that he has carried his team, which has been banged up this year, the fact that he's exceeded all expectations individually and as a team is why he's being considered the front runner now.
I think it's pretty obvious that Team USA, whoever's been there, has benefited immensely from last year.
Oh, yeah. Look at guys like Russell Westbrook.
You look at Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant now taking off.
Kevin Love.
Oh, yeah. The list goes on and on.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Everybody, even to an extent, I would say Danny Granger in Indiana.
True. Good one.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that Coach K has had a big-time impact on these players in the NBA level. And I think that I know he's very satisfied at Duke, but if you're an NBA general manager, you've got to be trying your darndest to try to pry this guy to college at this point.
Good luck.
Yeah. And while we're right here, before we move on, I do want to give some love to Kevin Durant, because this guy was the odds-on favorite, not just in NBA circles, but in Vegas, to win the MVP going into this year. He has not had a bad season by any stretch, by any means. He's been great. The fact that Russell Westbrook has stepped up and has had a career season has maybe taken people's attention off of Durant for MVP
I think Durant is the second half MVP. I think so. I think it's fair to say that he's been one of the more effective and reliable players down the stretch since the All-Star bait.
He's lived up to all expectations. His team has exceeded all expectations. They've been great.
The first half of the season, though, you can't give a guy MVP for that first half.
He's been leading the scoring race pretty much the entire
season. Yeah, the scoring
season.
He was expected to win. You talk about expectations again. He was really expected to win the scoring race. Like, there was supposed to be nobody.
Well, again,
that
we go back to expectations. We go back to expectations, and I think that's why Durant isn't being given a lot of love right now. That's why people are talking, well, obviously, Derrick Rose, LeBron's in there. We were talking about Dwight Howard.
Up, though. He's missed some games.
The fact that people have expected him to be the best scoring-wise, and he is.
Yeah,
is he being discounted because he's as good as people thought that he was?
I think that a part of that discount does come down to Westbrook, as you said. I think Westbrook having the year that he's had, it's kind of tough to give MVP.
I agree.
When you don't know who the MVP of that team is necessarily this season.
And once again, we come back to Derrick Rose, because LeBron has had Wade, Durant has had Westbrook, and Rose has had people in and out of the lineup all year. I hate to say it, but again, I'll say it. Derrick Rose has earned it.
To be fair to, again, the Chicago Bulls, Taj Gibson has stepped up and looked like... you laugh, but Taj Gibson
should be your MVP.
No, Taj Gibson has been one of the best defensive power forwards in the entire NBA this season. Like, they've had some guys step up in weird areas and play D that they didn't expect to.
From there, should we move on to Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, let's move on to Defensive.
You taking Taj?
D-How.
Taj Gibson.
If there's anybody other than Dwight Howard, it has to be Kevin Garnett, right?
Maybe Luke Ridenour.
Yeah, maybe.
The first half of this season,
Luke Ridenour, Steph Curry, and who else would be on that? J.J. Redick would be on the all-NBA defensive team. Yeah, Jose de Calderon.
Halfway through the season, I was ready to give this award to Tyson Chandler just for single-handedly changing the defensive culture in Dallas. He's been healthy this year. He's been great. He's led that team defensively, and they've had a huge improvement. But just around the point in which I was ready to hand him the award, the Orlando Magic make a trade for Gilbert Arenas, Hedo Turkoglu, Jason Richardson, almost sacrificing, I would say, their perimeter defense. I don't think any one of those guys is going to be winning defensive player anytime soon. And then you look at the people that are surrounding Dwight in the front court on that team. Brian Anderson, Brandon Bass. Who else you got? Earl Clark. And
does Earl Clark play?
Again, a little bit. As much as I wanted to give this award to Tyson Chandler, because I do respect what he's done in Dallas, the fact that Dwight Howard, like Matt was saying earlier, has done as much as he's done in the paint this year, kind of carrying that front line and making them one of the best defensive teams in the league, where they should have no business being when you look at the other players on that team, Dwight Howard, Defensive Player of the Year.
I do agree 100%, Dwight Howard. You look at the impact this guy has down low, no question about it, and especially considering the team that surrounds him. The one guy I do want to give a shout-out to, though, who I think has now established himself as the best shooting guard / small forward at the defensive position right now, is playing in Philadelphia, and that's Andre Iguodala. Iggy Pop has been unreal this year when he comes off from the injury. He's been taking some flack about the contract stuff. He's taken all that and he's ridden with it. Since Collins took over there, they went from being, I think, 23rd to the 8th ranked defense in the NBA.
They're
13th now?
Yeah.
So that's dropped a little bit since the last time I checked. But anyways, we've got a situation here where that defense is being directly linked to not only the coaching, but to Iggy. Iggy has been unreal. He can close. He can defend just about anybody at the 2-3 in the NBA. He's an athletic freak. And if he can stay healthy, I think he next year has a shot at becoming that defensive MVP.
I don't know how much Spencer Hawes is bailing him out in the paint there, so give him credit for that. Orlando's number five, sorry, defensively.
I think as long as Dwight Howard's healthy, no one's going to beat him for that title for the next couple of years.
Yep.
That's fair. Dwight's a beast. Like you said, it's a lock this year. We just got to kind of look at, you know, who else out there is making an impact. And I think KG is one of those guys.
Taj Gibson was one
of those guys. I'm telling you.
Oh, God.
He was a monster for the Bulls this year.
Andrew Bogut.
Bogut is another guy that...
He blocks a lot of shots.
But I think when it comes to the twos and the threes, Iggy was the guy this year. And then, obviously, we'll give a little shout-out to Mr. Memphis, Tony Allen.
Yeah, he's had a great second half. Yeah, once Rudy Gay has gone down, he's held down the fort over there, and we'll be talking about Memphis when we're previewing the playoffs.
He's one of those guys that you actually have to watch just because of his defense, right?
Absolutely.
Like he's that good. So, again, if he could be a starter all year, I think he could challenge maybe a little bit of D-How too. Tough, though, for the guards, as we know, the only point guard to ever win Defensive Player of the Year.
Where did he say it?
Gary Payton, baby. Gary Payton, the only point guard.
We don't have the time to talk about Gary Payton. Right, moving along.
Let's go to coach, because first of all, we mentioned that Philly, how they've absolutely skyrocketed in the defensive rankings, and how amazing they've been since Coach Collins took over there. Do you think that he has any merit for Coach of the Year, or who do you guys got?
I think Collins has merit, but my Coach of the Year goes to George Karl in Denver with the turmoil that team went through this year. They're 8-2 in their last 10 right now, and they're marching into playoffs in the fifth seed. A completely different team from what he started with, and he's done a really good job with whatever players he's been put in front of him. Really, he's done a good job of coaching them into a decent playoff contender now.
Yeah, they're also second in efficiency since the All-Star break, and that's pretty much since the trade was made. You got to look at a lot of that as coaching, to be able to take in all those new players, and mix them into a brand new offense and a new system and just be like, listen, guys, we're going to play together, we're going to win some team ball, and that's what they're doing.
And to be able to come back from, obviously, the health issues that he's had, the personal issues, be able to hold it together and lead that team the way he has this year has been fantastic. I actually changed my pick 10 minutes ago. 10 minutes ago, I was... Two guys neck and neck in my mind anyways. You know I love the Portland Trail Blazers. You know they've been through a lot this year with their injuries, with everything they've had to overcome. And Nate McMillan, former Coach of the Year, has done a great job there.
A little bit. He's not even really being mentioned.
A little bit. And he was my pick. But
I thought for sure you were going that route.
He was my pick. I changed it. As much as, again, I didn't want to give Derrick Rose the MVP. I don't want to give Thibodeau Coach of the Year. And I wasn't planning on it because I figured, I thought back to last year and I thought, you know what, Chicago was a pretty good defensive team last year too. So Thibodeau coming in, changing the defensive culture is what people were claiming. I didn't know how much he actually did that until I looked at these numbers, and Chicago, the second ranked defensive team right now, very close to Boston for number one spot. They were 13th last year. That's a big jump.
Yeah, you got to credit D Rose. That's too, buying into that system.
What we were talking about his defense. We're talking defense here.
No,
it's funny that we should talk about defense. We factored into the MVP race a little bit. Obviously, we talked Defensive Player of the Year, and now I'm talking defense again. Coach of the Year, 13th to second. The point differential there that they're giving up this year is massive. Thibodeau has completely changed this culture. As much as I didn't want to believe it,
yeah, and despite injuries to Joakim Noah,
exactly,
which is really your cornerstone down low.
Also look at it. If they win out their next two games, he goes 62-28, which ties Paul Westphal It's not most winningest coach, but it's winningest coach in his first season with a team.
He's been in the NBA family for a long time. Yeah. He's finally getting the opportunity to show what he can do.
A lot of doubters when he went there. A lot of people didn't think he was ready to be a starting coach.
He's not coaching for the Miami Heat right now. He doesn't have a superstar roster. They have obvious holes at the two-guard position. The bench is questionable, but they're having a great season. They could potentially finish the year with the best record in the NBA. Certainly they're finishing with the top of the East. And we talked about expectations and exceeding expectations earlier. You have to give this guy credit for that.
So we think it's pretty fair, though, that those are the coaches that should be in the running. Collins, Karl,
McMillan,
and Thibodeau.
Yeah.
And you got anybody else, Bunks?
Every year should get a little bit of a look. And then there's also a little bit of an issue with me where Jerry Sloan never received the Coach of the Year award.
It makes me sad.
I bring that up all the time.
I don't think, obviously, it would be It'd be corny and it would be cheesy and it would be ruining things to give him something like that.
No.
Can't do it.
Are you really going to let Jerry Sloan go 16 seasons in the NBA without a coach of the year? I don't know. It doesn't feel right.
You can't give it to him once he's
already
gone.
The guy's already made his position clear that he won't be returning to the NBA, so I don't know. I wouldn't mind something corny like that.
The award is flawed in that it's given to the coach of the team normally that improves the most or improves a great deal, which is why Sam Mitchell is a former coach of the year.
This was definitely a year where there was a lot of coaches that deserved some recognition.
But I'm happy with hopefully Thibodeau receiving this award. I'm satisfied with that because here you're giving it to a coach that not only is the coach of a great team in Chicago, unlike when the Raptors head coach won it with Sam Mitchell, but also a team that has improved a great deal. So you're getting the best of both worlds this year with Thibodeau, I think. I'm happy with that pick.
Okay, so moving along then, what do we got for sixth man?
This is another one that I debated between because Jamal Crawford and Jason Terry are always going to be in the conversation.
Always.
But because of how well Lamar Odom has bought into his role off the bench this year, he started 30-some-odd games, but coming off the bench, playing in relief of Gasol and Bynum and just understanding his role and exceeding what he's done over the last few years off the bench, what he's meant to this Lakers team.
The only tough one there is he started the first 34 games of the season.
He'll still be considered.
Yeah.
Oh, I know he'll be considered, and he'll probably win the award. I'm just saying, he did start the first 34 coming off, or not coming off the bench.
I'm a little rattled right now, because I didn't think anybody was going to say Odom as fast as he did.
You didn't think anybody was going to say Lamar Odom?
Not right away, though.
I give it to him almost out of default, because Jamal Crawford has not been better than
can I give you a Jason Terry?
Last year when
can
he won
I
it?
Give you a couple Jason Terry stats? Because, again, a Seattle native.
Can we let's hear it?
I love to shout out my Seattle boys, and I will shout out Jason Terry. I think he deserves the award again. I know that the guys, I don't know, he's coming to a little bit of difficulty lately, but let's hear these two quick things. He and Dirk have combined for the most fourth quarter points out of any duo in the NBA, and the dude comes off the bench. The other thing is he's the first player since Del Curry in the 90s to have three consecutive seasons with over 1,000 points. How do you not give that to him? How do you not give him the award?
He's a closer.
He is the sixth man. He's the NBA sixth man.
I give it to him.
I know he's there every year, but that's no reason to punish him. He's the NBA sixth man.
I still give it to Odom as a sixth man because with Odom as your sixth man, you're given so many options there that he can come in for any player pretty much outside the point guard.
That is nice about him.
You can play him as a two if you really wanted to. You can whoever gets in foul trouble, it doesn't matter. You can play him in a center. You go back to Team USA, they played him at center for a lot of the games.
Yeah, that was Team USA, though. I don't think that you'll see the Lakers play him too much.
I don't think they will, but if Bynum gets in trouble, foul trouble, they can put Odom in at really any position.
And he's very flexible.
He's averaging 14 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists a game.
He's probably about 2 weeks away from diabetes with all that sugar he eats, though. So
true enough.
Take that into account.
Have you been watching the reality show? Didn't that premiere the other day?
Yeah, maybe we should take the award away from him for that.
I really want to see that show.
I'll give Giannis credit in this case, and only in this case, because it's very, very close between Odom and Terry. Terry's been in the league for what? I believe it's like 12 seasons or so.
Yeah, 12 or
16. And is there a guard that you can think of that gets as little credit as he does that has been more consistent than he has been? I mean, listen to these averages in the last 5-6 years, point averages anyway. 17, 17, 16, 20, 17, 16.
He can fill it up. Like, there's no question about it.
He continues to do it.
He's an elite scorer in the NBA. And I think that if you asked a lot of the greatest defenders in the NBA, who would you hate to guard in the crunch time, Jason Terry's name would come up in that list. He's a crunch time player. He's a big money ball player.
Oh, yeah. He's hit a ton of big shots for Dallas over the years.
Do they give ties for six men?
Rarely.
No ties. Ties is a soccer thing. We won't go there.
Or a Grant Hill, Jason Kidd thing?
Yeah, that's true. That was a Grant.
Do you want to talk about Rookie of the Year while we're there?
Let's go over.
What's there to talk about?
Controversy?
Yeah, this is a very controversial field. Blake Griffin and DeMarcus Cousins.
you want to hear what a fool I am? Yeah. I'll admit to this.
I hear it every week.
Full disclosure. Going into the year, I wanted to be a bit of a jerk. I wanted to be the guy that can kind of laugh in people's face and say, I told you so at the end of the year when something crazy happens.
Oh, it feels so good.
You?
So I said, neither first picks will win this Rookie of the Year. Not Blake Griffin, not John Wall. I picked Evan Turner.
Oof.
Oof. Now, on the opposite side of that coin, we get to sit here and go, what were you thinking?
Evan Turner was rejected as looking terrible as well. Like, it wasn't like this guy was getting a lot of love.
I love his talent. I love what I still think that he'll be able to do at some point in his career.
Such a weird
but
fit in Philly, though, too. Like, that draft. Like,
I thought him and Iguodala would be good together. But
you just thought they would, like, what, throw Drew Holiday to the Wolves? Just completely ignore him?
Well, Drew is
Lou
there.
Williams, they just have so many guys in that kind of like mold that they just try to fit them in there. It's like what we saw with the Rockets. You have too many players that are decent at one position. It actually doesn't work out. You get rid of a couple of them. It starts to pan out a little bit better. But yeah, we go back to who's going to win the Rookie of the Year. It's going to be Blake Griffin. It's not even close. John Wall is the not even close second.
DeMarcus Cousins is the not even close third, maybe.
I think, though, that's like an argument. DeMarcus Cousins or Fields? Who you got? For third. Who's the third?
I have someone over both of them, actually.
Who you got? Who's over third?
I'm going to give some love to Jordan Crawford in the second half of the year. Stepping up, averaging 11 points on the season, considering the fact that this guy barely even played in the first half.
Well, that's why you can't give him Rookie of the Year. He didn't play.
No, well, I'll give it to him over.
So you give him the second half. You give it to him over Landry Fields and over DeMarcus Cousins, really?
Come why not?
Fine. Why not?
That's just a Lewinberg pick.
Yeah, that's just another
devil's advocate.
Yep. I'm going to be crazy and try to rub it in people's faces kind of thing. All
Evan
right.
Turner.
Blake Griffin, so, Rookie of the
Year. Blake Griffin, congratulations on your Rookie of the Year. No one deserves it better. I think the guy averaged, since the All-Star break, like a 21-11. Absolute
and he slowed
beast.
Down.
Yeah, he
slowed down. To
I think he's closer to winning MVP than he is to losing Rookie of the Year.
You know what?
I think the margin of difference is
closer to winning President of the United States than losing Rookie of the Year.
That brings up something. What Rookie of the Year can you think of had a more dominant season than Blake Griffin?
I think Shaq was the only one
two.
I could put. Shaq was
Ralph Sampson. Ralph Sampson had a great rookie.
Iverson was consensus. Duncan was consensus.
Yeah, Duncan had a good one, too.
No,
but even
they,
then,
even
you
then
look at the numbers
like
compared to Blake and what he's done, it's just...
For me, it's only Ralph. That's the only one I can think of right now that was the unanimous, like, unquestioned.
I think Shaq was close to, like, a 20
Let's
and 10.
Talk this out. We got Blake Griffin 22 and 12 this year in his rookie season.
And 12.
What do you think Duncan had in his rookie year? Let's get some estimates.
18 and 10, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
I don't think he averaged 20.
21 and 12.
Ooh.
Oh.
1 point less than Blake Griffin.
Wah-wah. Sorry, Tim.
Very close.
That being said, do you think that Blake's going to turn into a scorer like Tim?
I think when it comes down to it, we're looking at two of the best power forwards in NBA history when both of their careers are done. That's right cool. Now, I'd say Tim Duncan is the best power forward of all time. Blake Griffin will be in that conversation.
And you kind of got polar opposites.
Barring injury.
Tim Duncan always blamed for being the boring, off-the-glass type player. Actually, Matt Hayes showcased some of that shooting ability to me over the last weekend.
I love Tim Duncan's game.
Yeah, he's very, very, models his game very much around Tim Duncan. You've got the kind of like boring, gets ragged upon player, but always won. And now you've kind of got the electrifying highlight machine on the perennial loser.
Did they ever come up with a nickname for Blake Griffin?
You mean other than the Rim Reaper?
Other than the Rim Reaper.
Oh, the Blake Show. I always thought was kind of just the...
I've heard a lot of garbage. It's a tough one.
Yeah, the favorite has been for me the Rim Reaper and the Blake Show. Right? But again, the Blake Show, when he does his final move to the Los Angeles Lakers, that's when that's going to come in. All right, last one. Most improved.
Well, I know what Josh is going to go with here.
Do you?
I do. I'm pretty sure I know.
That's a problem in thinking that I'm predictable. I'm
predicting that
I'm going to be predictable.
Fine. I'll start off with Kevin Love. 20 points and 15 rebounds
a game.
You're
going to take my boy, Kevin Love?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Steal him from me?
The guy averaged 15 rebounds a game.
He's the consensus, or one of them at least.
Last season, he was only 14 and 11. This season, 20 and 15.
Plus now he can shoot the three ball.
Plus
man.
Now
he's
47%
he
shoots a pretty good percentage from there.
Yeah, he's great.
And he's on a terrible team. I'll give him that.
UCLA Bruin. Love him. Love Kevin Love. The only thing was, again, last week, kind of feel like he gets a bit of a pass because of possibly his race. Bill Simmons brought that up a little while back. Dude chases stats, doesn't win, and does every interview in the books.
No one's going to win in Minnesota right now.
It doesn't matter. He still stat chases, and no one gives him a hard time about it.
I do.
Just love it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
except for Lewinberg. That's the only guy that I'll give credit to. Who you got, J. Lou? I know who you got.
It's not Kevin Love. Who do you think I have?
I think you got...
Does it rhyme with Marcus Muldridge?
I think that's it.
No.
No. Oh, goodness.
It does not.
This defies everything. For those of you that don't listen to this show or just tuning in for the first time, to not hear LaMarcus Aldridge get nominated for both MVP or Most Improved Player by Josh Lewinberg is pretty incredible. So let's get a little drum roll, please.
He takes a swig of his water. Josh
Lewinberg. What do you got, Josh? What do you got?
This may just be a personal preference when it comes to this award, but I always, always get pissed off when this award is given to someone whose improvement could be seen coming a mile away. And that's why Kevin Love has been great this year, but we knew he was going to get more minutes this year with Jefferson gone. We knew that he was going to have a big year. LaMarcus Aldridge, a little bit more out of the blue. I think I don't think anyone expected him to carry this team the way that he has, but he was averaging 18 points last year, 22 this year. Not a huge differential. Not a huge differential. I think his improvement has been more gradual. So when I discuss this award, I want to give it to someone who has come completely out of nowhere to slap us across the face with the type of year that he's had.
Fair enough.
And that is Golden State's Darrell Wright.
Beauty.
If you told me at the beginning of the year that Darrell Wright, let me say that again, Darrell Wright,
Doughy,
Darrell Wright would average 16 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists,
and
1.5 steals, 2 threes, etc., 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 etc. Fantasy players, you love this man.
Oh,
for good reason.
He's on my team.
For good reason. If you told me he was averaging 16 points when he averaged 7 points last year, I would have said you're nuts. I don't care where he's playing. Yeah, it's a system in which he's going to be able to run the court. He's going to be able to play his game. But we've seen players that are like him go into that system and fail miserably. There has to be something there for you to succeed in that system. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think that I think Darrell Wright was a beast this season. I think that, yeah, when it comes to most improved guys, there is a popular argument where it's just like, you know, you don't want to give it to guys that they didn't, that were lottery picks, that were expected to improve. You want to give it to the guys, yep, that were at the bottom end of the rung that, you know, really started to show something later on.
He went from a team in Miami that wouldn't let him run, that wouldn't let him do his thing. He's gone, yeah, to a team where he fits in perfectly, and he's excelling.
I didn't really think about Darrell Wright. That's a really good pick.
Oh, no, that's a fine pick.
He won't win it.
Darrell Wright. Yeah,
oh, that makes no, he won't sad. Win it.
He won't win it. It'll be numbers. Kevin Love, probably, or LaMarcus Aldridge. It has to be one of those two guys just based on the shift.
This is my favorite award, by the way. I love most improved player.
Well, we'll give that some love to Darrell Wright. He's deep in the game. And now we're going to hit you with some Chameleon Air with Deep Off in the Game from Man on Fire. Hey, man, what's wrong with you? Like dang. One shot, one kill, ask anybody body, they gon' tell you bun real. Southern smoke when I pull up for ya. Calico get unleashed, niggas clearing the coda. Perfecto ENT, ENT. We moving much weight, and this one for pimp. In the penitentiary upstate. Damn, come on, bun, wait. Now, nigga, this one dedicated to pimp. In the penitentiary upstate. Till he come home in the thing, we ballin'. We never forget the homies on lock of the fallin'. Band IT, Young Low, and Bad Ass Bam. Sean, we in big money, and we ain't giving a damn. If you need a kilogram, 2, 3, or a dozen, come on down to Texas, holla at your gun. I can show you how to get stains, how to flip chains. Show you how to grip grain, how to drip stains. This we keep off in the game, this we keep off in the game. This we keep off in the game, this we keep off in the game. We be kicking in your back door, knocking back phones. All right, we're back. Thank you, Chameleon Air, for giving us that little break. Now we're going to move over to, I think, what might be our final installment. We'll see.
Maybe.
We'll keep you posted on Full Court Fantasy with Josh Lewinberg. So, broom-pa.
Get it over to Josh. Let's go. Let's take it away. So, season's coming to an end. Let's take a look at next season. We have a bunch of players this year that have stepped up in the last couple months, like they always do when they get a little bit more time at the end of the season. Here are 5 players that finished in the top 50 in the Yahoo rankings in the final month of the season, and we'll see if maybe they have a chance at repeating next year. Ty Lawson's the first one. We'll talk about him a bit more later and what he's done recently. But since he's been named the starter after the trade, 15 points, 7 assists. Even if Felton is around next year, which you have to figure he might not because he could be traded, Ty Lawson is the future. He's real. Draft Ty Lawson next year. Marcus Thornton, another player. He'll actually be a free agent at the end of the year, so it depends where he ends up. But with Sacramento, he's averaged over 20 points a year. He's been fantastic. Depending on where he ends up, if it's a good fit, we could be seeing a lot more of this. He has a ton of talent. He was overlooked in New Orleans, maybe for his defensive deficiencies, but you gotta love Marcus Thornton. Greg Monroe, the rookie in Detroit, post All-Star game, he's averaged 14-10. They're a young team. He's a young player. He's looking like the best player on that team. He will play. Draft him high. Kyle Lowry, post All-Star numbers have been fantastic. 17 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists. They traded away their point guard, Aaron Brooks, who was great last year, so you have to figure they believe in him.
Seattle boy.
He's still 25 years old. There's no reason to expect anything less from him next year. Here's a difficult case with Marcin Gortat in Phoenix, who in 52 games with the Suns this year have averaged 13-9 points, 56% shooting in only 29 minutes. He's finally blossoming outside of Dwight Howard's shadow, but there's still some competition in the front court there with Channing Frye and Robin Lopez. So I would temper expectations next year. I think he might be a trendy sleeper pick that might go higher than he deserved to go because there is still competition for minutes with the Suns. But keep an eye on what they do in the offseason.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so right, much, Josh Loomer.
Well said.
I completely agree. I think Gortat there, he might be the most legitimate center maybe in the last 20 years for the Phoenix Suns. That being said, as a fantasy guy going into next year with Lopez being healthy, with Frye.
You don't call Stoudemire a center?
No, he's power forward. Come on, I'm tired of hearing Stoudemire as center. If you don't play defense, you can't be a center, all
true
right?
Enough.
Like if you don't play defense and you don't rebound well, you're not a center.
Shh, Channing Frye can hear you.
Yeah. Channing Frye at least can shoot the three ball like so many
we
centers.
We know he's listening.
Yeah, yes. So, now we're going to move over to that wonderful, wonderful segment of the show we like to call 24 Second Shot Clock.
Yeah.
And it's where each of my boys here get 24 seconds to answer one of the couple questions from around the NBA. So we're going to see what that is. Started off with a little bit of suspension news. The Clippers.
Ooh.
We got news that Eric Bledsoe has been suspended one game for undisclosed reasons. But Coach Vinny Del Negro was actually quoted saying, "Some things you just can't bend on, but we're going to try to settle this matter internally." So we'll start, as always, with Matt Hayes. Matty, should teams have to disclose why players are getting suspended? And if not, why not?
I feel that if teams are going to suspend players for a substantial amount of time, they should have to disclose it. But for one-game things, that could be for anything. And what goes on in the locker room is a lot different than what goes on in reality out in the real world. A lot of things should be left in the locker room. If you need to suspend a guy for one game for some sort of disciplinary hearing or something he did wrong, that can stay in the locker room. There's no need to throw that player's name out in the media and to ruin his character, really. Leave it.
J-Lew.
Yeah, I agree with mostly all of that. It's an internal issue, and it's got to stay that way if they feel the need to divulge. And again, a lot of time when players or when coaches, management do divulge stuff like that, it's for the media attention and to try to get that player's attention and to try to discipline them through exposure. In this case, they felt the fine, the suspension would do the trick, so have at it.
See, maybe I'm just a curious guy, but I wish they would tell. Like, I if it's something that he's going to say, some things you just can't bend over, or bend over, some things you just can't bend over. Yeah.
But then it becomes somewhat of a distraction to the team. If it is a
it
minor
not
issue,
a distraction that he's missing a game and all of his teammates were going to want to know why. Like, why?
Well, his teammates probably know.
But the media is going to be going up to these players and saying, "Do you know anything about the Bledsoe situation?" I think that's more of a distraction than had they just been like out front and been like, "This is why."
It all depends what it was.
He was out at a whorehouse a little too late last night, and you know.
Way worse problem. Then you have to keep that.
Mind your business, Giannis. You don't have to know.
All right, fine. You know what was my business though? It was that Butler game on Monday. Butler and UConn, which
Woo!
We apologize for, yeah. Butler Bulldogs, they did have a great tournament. That being said, was that the most disappointing championship game either of you have ever seen? Josh?
The most disappointing I've ever seen, yes, absolutely. And I think that's what maybe we should expect when we have a team that's an 8 seed there in the final game. Obviously, everyone was very excited of the fact that here you have the Cinderella team 2 years in a row, but it just came down to a team that was overmatched, a team that was outplayed, and the statistics basically told the story there. They were brutal, 18.8% from the field. Dreadful to watch.
Maddie.
I'm going to reshape your question a little bit because I won't say I'm disappointed in the game because I'm
no kidding.
Ecstatic with the outcome, but it was a depressing game to watch. I want to say that UConn won the game, but they didn't. They played average at best, and Butler beat the crap out of themselves. Matt Howard 1-for-13. I can't remember Shelvin Max, but his percentage was worse if not.
It's garbage.
Yeah, it was garbage. The whole game was just terrible, but props to my UConn Huskies, NCAA champs.
How do you not get points in the paint until 7 minutes are left in the game? I don't even understand.
Yeah, and it wasn't like they didn't get shots. Like Smith and Howard got shots in the paint and they just missed them.
Missed layups. When they came out of that one timeout after the, I think there was like an 8-0 stretch, they
Jeremy
come out of
Lamb
a timeout.
Had a dunk. And
yeah,
then
Lamb dunks it. They come out of the timeout and then they do a set play for
Howard
and he misses a wide open left-handed layup. And I was this game is
done. I'll give UConn credit, though. They rebounded the ball really, really well. It was usually just one shot and done. They didn't get to the boards very well.
We always give the UConn credit. Next, we're going to give some credit to a couple of role players, somebody that we just had shouted out on Full Court Fantasy, Ty Lawson started the game 10 for 10 from the three-point line, set an NBA record. And then another NBA record was set on Friday with the Suns and the Hornets. Willie, the Green Hornet. Willie Green.
Yeah, yeah, we got it.
I'm familiar with his work.
Willie Green
Hornet. We need an applause sound effect.
Willie Green Hornet. Dude goes, starts the game 12 for 12, and actually his teammate there, Landry, started, I think, the two of them at one point were 15 to 15. Regardless, which one of these two guys, the Green Hornet, and your boy, Lawson, which one of these two impressed you more over the last week? Matty Hayes.
Oh, geez. I don't know if I can really choose between the two. Ty Lawson, 10 for 10 from three. Never shot 10 threes in my career. So
yeah,
that,
no one's surprised. You're 6'9".
Yeah, that alone, that might be slightly more impressive than Willie Green, but the fact that I haven't heard Willie Green's name mentioned, much less the Green Hornet, sweet nickname.
It is a sweet
nickname. I haven't heard him mentioned in years, it seems, but I'm going to give it to Lawson.
You're done without an answer. And
yeah, I can't answer that.
Over to Josh.
I don't know that I can give you much.
Oh, no answers
answer.
Today.
They're both impressive. Like Maddie was saying, Willie Green, where the hell has he been? Where
New
he
Orleans.
At? Where he at?
He's been in New Orleans.
He's not on Philadelphia anymore?
No, he's in New Orleans. Lighting it up. Going 12 for 12 to start games. Like, lighting his team up. Leading them past Phoenix. That's where he is.
I was impressed by that game, but I'm more impressed by Ty Lawson, period. He's been fantastic, and that game just capper on it.
Yo,
it's been great.
How about a little shout-out, though, for your boy with the triple-double?
Drew Gooden.
Drew Gooden.
Drewy.
Boy's getting paid $6 million to sit around on his butt and then show up for one game. 15 points, 13 rebounds, 13 assists, I believe.
Woo!
How is Drew Gooden getting 13 assists?
Just
how?
Gooden enough.
How? Yeah. Oh.
He's not even Gooden enough.
All right, last one. Last one for the clock, boys. Couple of rumors surrounding our Toronto Raptors management. We've got Colangelo being rumored to be going to New York, replacing Walsh if he is to leave Indiana. He was a little bothered by the statements, but either way, the guy's been rumored as a successor. And then we've also got rumors that, you know, this could be Mr. Triano's final season as the Raptors head coach. So if you had to choose one of them, Josh, which one should go?
I don't know necessarily that either deserve to go at this point necessarily. I mean, Triano, I don't think is a great coach. I don't think this should be the guy that takes this team where they want to go. But at the same time, I can't fault him. He doesn't have enough talent to work with at this point in time. But I still believe in what Colangelo is able to do in the front office. So I would think that Triano would deserve to go more than Colangelo.
Maddie?
I agree but disagree with Josh. I don't think either should be let go, but if I had to choose one, I would send Colangelo packing on his way. He's made a couple moves in the past that I just am baffled by. The Turkoglu signing was just sickening to me. And he hasn't... He's tried. I'll give him credit. He's tried, but he's also failed.
Desperate times called for desperate measures there. I mean, you have to suck up to Bosch. You have to bring somebody in, right?
Ugh. Oh, suck anybody
up to Bosch
but.
And then dirt Bosch. Yeah, see, for me... Goes without saying. I think it's Colangelo. The dude's been, I'd say, disappointing. He came to a Raptors team, had a nice little season there to begin it, got the executive of the year, hyped that all up. We were supposed to have this chosen one or whatever, but in my opinion, he miffed the Bargnani draft. He did. I think
should they have drafted?
I think LaMarcus Aldridge was a viable pick. I think had you picked LaMarcus Aldridge, it wasn't a problem. And also, I know his knees are gone now, but at
Brandon
the time
Roy.
I wanted Brandon.
Yeah,
Roy.
Well, that knee situation didn't come out of nowhere. Anyone that was doing any scouting at that point in time knew that this was going to be an issue.
In Colangelo's defense at the time.
In Colangelo's defense,
time,
that was a terrible
I
draft.
I wanted the Raptors to draft Tyrus Thomas.
Oh, God.
That was my... I was
terrible
like,
draft.
The LSU
I will
maybe.
Not fault him for Bargnani. I will not
fault him
for
Bargnani. I fault him for turning the Raptors into an Italian construction company and then just absolutely...
Why not take the guy that has the most upside, which at that point was, and maybe even still is, Bargnani?
Why not take someone that plays in a country where there's good basketball players instead of
there's
like six?
Okay, wow.
I'm tired of this Italy.
We're walking down another path
Italy.
Here.
Like, okay, listen. Maybe. Sorry, Italy. You got some great players, but let's just look at the track record of the USA versus...
Danilo Gallinari.
Oh, Danilo. Yeah, okay. So love to Danilo. All right, fine, whatever. I'll give it that. I don't make sense, and apparently if it don't make dollars, then it don't make sense. Here's Black Rock and Pharrell Munch.
Oh man, this is very scary. This is a Bobby, not the ordinary. You won't hear that, don't you? Yeah. Hey, yo, it's trying to pick up a little bit. This number tell her what I was trying to tell her. You got me? Old man Joe. Like Tony Sox, then we throw your ass in the Cobra clutch. The man watch as your whole head opens up. Sober up, nigga. It's the Bob Digi. We throw darts in the air that flow like a frisbee. My niggas frostbitten glass, over crispy. Love my wins, but y'all does, nigga, miss me. I'm bionic, my chronic job, the Digi juice. My fist smashed as Bruce, you better call a truce. No excuse, the black man must stand up. Time to make the Wu sign, throw both of y'all hands up. You see me in a Maserati Gran Turismo.
That's a ridiculously awesome city, that Black Rock.
I wish we could have listened to more of it.
Yeah, no, and I'm doing.
I had just about
various
enough.
Various hip hop artists. Yeah, Josh Lewenberg's
had enough of you, Josh Lewenberg.
You know what?
Bah, humbug.
Oh, man. So let's talk about NBA playoffs, guys, because that's
love,
coming up.
Love to.
We've got two more games still left on the regular season for just about every team. That being said, there's quite a bit that can still go on in the West, but in the East, everything's pretty much locked up except for Boston and Miami played each other last night. Miami took that 2 seed. They took the advantage.
Smashed them.
And it looks like Miami will probably keep that 2 seed, fair enough to say, because they play, I think, Toronto and Atlanta tonight.
Yes, but also keep in mind, Boston does have that tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And they've got Washington and New York.
Yeah.
So
not terrible. So, and then on the flip side, though, on the other end of that conference, you've got at the bottom Indiana and Philadelphia. And Indiana's Indiana's locked in at the 8 spot. They are the 8. But when you look at the 7 and 6, when we're looking at who's going to match up against the 2s and 3s, we've got Philadelphia and New York. And these two teams are still jockeying for position as well.
They're jockeying for a losing position.
So let's go and let's look at it from the bottom end, because those are the guys that are scraping and crawling. If you're Philly, who would you rather play, Miami or Boston?
Well, Philadelphia only has one win against the Miami-Boston
duo. They lack some star power.
They beat Boston earlier on in the year, and they've been struggling. So I don't know. Like I don't think they have much of a chance against either. I really don't.
You'd say you'd rather want to play Boston.
I wouldn't have said this early on in the year, because I actually thought Boston, come playoff time, would be very, very dangerous. I still don't know about Miami, what they're going to be able to do in the playoffs, but Boston's looking... not looking great recently. Yep. After that Perkins trade, I'm telling you, things have changed, if not on court, in the locker room, and the chemistry isn't the same as it once was. They're falling apart.
You saw it last night. They lost by 30 to Miami.
Yeah, they got blown out.
Rondo's been shaky.
And that was a game they should have come to play for, most definitely. Like, oh, if you look at a series where it's going to be Boston to Miami, most likely, in the they might have just pissed away home court advantage.
The more interesting question actually lies with New York, not Philadelphia. Yeah. Because, yeah, I think most people would rather play Boston than Miami at this point, just based on the front court issues that that Boston is having. But New York has split the series with Miami this year.
How fun would that be?
And they've lost all three to Boston.
Back to the 90s when we used to see the Ewing and Alonzo Mourning go head-to-head. Now we'd be seeing a new generation of Carmelo Anthony versus LeBron James. I'd be super
excited
for that
matchup. Should the Knicks be hoping for the Heat? They've done better against them.
If I'm the Knicks, I'm hoping for the Heat, definitely. And it comes down to an issue of depth. If you look at the Celtics, even though they're a little bit shakier right now, they definitely have depth in spades. And when you look at the New York Knicks, they're looking like the Miami Heat B. And I think that if you look at a matchup-to-matchup kind of thing, you look at Amari versus Bosch. I kind of like Amari, even though he's wearing some protective boot or something like that right now to take care of his feet. And then you look at the other situation, which is LeBron and Carmelo, and I think that matches up okay. And then Tony Douglas, ACC Defensive Player of the Year, he's somebody that I think matches up okay with. Obviously, he doesn't have the offensive upside of Dwayne Wade, but I think he's somebody that can work as a stopper of D-Wade.
New York is dangerous, if for no other reason than they're still a bit of an unknown, and everyone should fear the unknown in general.
In life, they have struggled down the stretch. They've looked pretty crappy.
Yeah. Not recently.
Yeah, recently they've been a little
playoffs
bit better.
Playoffs is a different animal, though. When you have the star power of Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony,
I still don't trust a combination of those players in the D'Antoni system.
I don't think they will win, but I'm not sure I'd be surprised if they...
I think switching Felton for Chauncey Billups has changed that system.
They're going to be going into the playoffs very hot. They've won 7 in a row.
7 in a row now, yeah. They've heated up.
So basically we could agree you don't want to play New York.
So, well, yeah, you'd
if
rather
If you're
play...
Miami and Boston, you want to play Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think so.
And if you're Chicago, you are licking your lips at the fact that you're playing
Pacers.
Indiana. Is this the worst or one of the worst playoff teams ever?
Yeah, they're not that great of a team. That being said, they've had a culture change. They've had a culture change.
Seven games under 500. The 2007 Atlanta Hawks.
Listen, you
got to
give them some credit though. They switched head coaches midway through the season. They took on a brand new point guard. They've had two sophomores emerge to become, you know, pretty decent players in their own right, and that's headlined, of course, by Hansborough. And then you've got guys like McRoberts that can come in, and I think that you've seen Roy Hibbert develop to a degree that, you know, wasn't expected. I read a trade rumor the other day that was talking about attempting to swap Hibbert to the Trailblazers for Greg Oden's contract. That was very interesting, that, you know, that's something that's even a possibility now. So I don't think they're the worst playoff team that's ever been in. They didn't have a great season. I'm not going to prop them up and say that they're fantastic. But they want to be a blood and guts team. They want to be a hardworking team. And I think that for somebody like Chicago, they could be a bit tougher. They could be a tougher draw than people are anticipating.
I'll be shocked if they win a game.
I won't be. I'd be shocked if they didn't take a home game for themselves.
Oh, God. They're going to get blown out.
Nah.
They've done well, generally, Indiana has, against the better teams in the league this year. Chicago has still won 3 out of 4 games in the series during the season. But
they're a team with great depth, again. Like, the Pacers have good depth.
I'll be shocked if they win.
They lack the star power, but they have great depth. And Danny Granger, if they could get a number one guy to compliment him and make him a two.
I admire the effort you're putting forth here.
No, I'm serious, though. Like, the Pacers, if you look at the foundation of what they have as a team right now, they look pretty good. They just need that 1A player to go with the 1B, which is Danny Granger.
But anyways, that won't be happening in the next couple days.
Moving to the only matchup that's actually set in stone.
The center of the East?
Yeah, the center of the East is set in stone as the Southeast matchup between Orlando and Atlanta. And for me, I don't see anything other than another Atlanta lay down and take it. No.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I thought you were going to say Atlanta's going to take it to them. But no, I definitely am all over the Orlando bandwagon. I was with Dwight Howard for the MVP and with Dwight Howard for most improved. I'm with him in the playoffs.
So you got the Orlando Magic.
What, oh, they're going to stomp.
You think
on
that
Atlanta.
There's going to be some laydown action?
Atlanta's limping into the playoffs as usual. They've lost 4 in a row. Atlanta has actually had
on their head coach.
Atlanta's actually had Orlando's number all year, winning 3 out of 4 games in the series. So I wouldn't discount Atlanta because they still have a great team.
They're so athletic.
And they're deep too. They have a lot of guys who can score.
Yep. And as far as that's like the main 6-man rotation that they have there with the 5 they start, Jamal Crawford off the bench, it doesn't get much better than that in the NBA. But I don't know. I think they've had their troubles in the playoffs. They've been well documented over the last few years what they've been able to do in the playoffs, which hasn't been a hell of a lot. And I don't love Orlando. I do foresee Orlando having major difficulties once they do get past Atlanta, but I do believe they will get past Atlanta.
Yes, I don't see Orlando as a long-term team this year either. There's just too many deficiencies with that ball club, and they rely so much on Howard being on the floor that if dude comes out, you've got what we saw in like the NCAA this year when Derek Williams was coming out of games with foul trouble and Arizona was absolutely bombing. I think that's very similar to what you would see if Arizona loses D-How. They've got no depth. The
Orlando.
Gilbert Arenas train.
And if he can't
sorry,
hit
what
free
did I
throws.
Say?
You said Arizona.
Arizona, yeah, sorry. I think that, yeah, they're a team that just lacks secondary scoring. Jameer Nelson has taken a step backwards.
Same with Jason Richardson.
Jason Richardson actually didn't look so bad in the last game.
He looks
I watched.
Good.
He looked good against the Bulls the other night. I was watching.
Not great.
Yeah, a good player, but I think ultimately Phoenix ended up with the steal of that trade in the long run, which was they got Gortat. I think that would ended up being the best player in the trade so
We've
far.
We've talked about it. They're very thin up front.
Yeah.
And I think in general, whenever you rely so much on one player, it's very,
Ryan
very
Anderson's
dangerous.
Been a nice surprise,
but especially
though.
If you're relying on that one player that's a big man that's in the front court that could so easily be taken out of the game with foul trouble or anything like that, and then you have guys like Ryan Anderson, Brandon Bass behind him, I don't see this Orlando team going
one
far.
One thing I'll give to the Atlanta Hawks, which going back to them is I did like the move where they swapped out Bibby for Heinrich. I thought that was decent. I know Bibby's the better shooter of the two, but when you look at like that team as a whole and what they have, the intangibles of them, I think that the combination of Teague and Heinrich is a lot better than, you know, Teague and
defensively and, anyways
yeah,
for sure.
It's defensively I think from a ball movement standpoint, I think from a maturity standpoint, I like that move, even though, again, it's swapping a Kansas guy for an Arizona guy. That's not my favorite kind of thing, but I really do. I think that Kirk Heinrich is the kind of leader that can maybe get them out of the first round. That being said, I just don't have faith in Josh Smith, and I don't have faith in Joe Johnson. Once they lose the first two games of this series, they're going to lay down and die. They've done it in the past, and I think they're going to do it again. And they really quit on that head coach. Like, the Drew... Drew's been, he's just waiting to get fired there. He's there's no chance this guy is back with the team next year. I think he's getting axed as soon as they get eliminated from the playoffs. That's just, it is what it is. Orlando moves on. I think we get a nice matchup between the two MVP candidates, like we said, Rose and Howard in the second round. Fair?
Fair. Fair.
Yeah. So let's move over to the West, though, where things
wild,
are,
wild West.
Things are crazy out West. There's nothing really settled out here. We do know who's going to be in, again.
That's about all
things
we know.
Things are settled. That's just about it. We know San Antonio has the one seed.
Locked it in.
Because, well, quite frankly, the Lakers, after we hyped them up last week, have been...
Five in a row.
Fast, spiraling.
How fast do
direction.
Things change
they
in the NBA?
They lost five in
honestly.
A row. When
yeah,
did that happen?
Here we are last week talking about the struggling Spurs and the,
yeah. And the Lakers, who had won 17 of 18, and now they've lost five in a row. We talked about the Knicks,
and the Spurs
too.
Have won four in a row.
The Knicks,
and
have,
the Knicks, have
the Knicks had lost up. 9 of 10, then they won seven in a row. That's what
are
we're...
Are we a curse?
No. No, we also call things, though. Like, we announced that, you know,
that's what
Sacramento
this league
is probably going to move, and we announced that. That happened. We called a couple of...
Some of us called Connecticut.
Some of us did call Connecticut. Jay-Z did end up getting that $50,000
yeah,
fine for
so,
ending
okay, we're not
the
bad. We're not
can
bad.
I provide some calm to this storm here?
Lauren won her NCAA Final Four bracket.
That I can't believe.
It's true.
That's
it's the truth.
Astonishing.
Lauren Millett won her basketball bracket with my advice going all the way to the house. Anyways, let's get back to the Western Conference Finals.
The Lakers.
Lakers. Terrible. Terrible as of late.
No. I'm so far from panicking.
Oh,
me
too.
They have the tiebreaker over Dallas and over OKC. So I do believe they will end off with that second seed. I do believe that they'll play either Memphis or New Orleans. And if they end up playing New Orleans, oh
nice
man,
draw.
Nice draw.
Draw.
Oh man, nice draw. And unlike in other sports like maybe baseball or hockey, we see it in a lot too, where if you're hot going to the playoffs, you can take everyone by storm. You
yeah,
can take everyone
really
by surprise.
Basketball.
That's not the way it is with basketball. Great teams can turn it on when it comes to the playoffs, especially teams like maybe a San Antonio or a Lakers that are built for the playoffs, built with veterans. And the Lakers were 4-7 going into the playoffs last year. I believe they're good enough. I believe they're as good, if not better, than last year, and they will turn it on when it matters. We saw it a few weeks ago. When this team is focused, when this team is playing the way that we know they can play, oh boy, are they dangerous, and they will be.
I'm not hitting the panic button either for the Lakers quite yet. Of course, we've got those two inside beasts we mentioned last week, Bynum and Gasol. And as long as those two guys can stay healthy and on the floor, then they can rival any two big guys in the entire NBA. That being said, I think that Memphis probably turns out to be the worst possible draw the Lakers could have in the first round out of any team other than Oklahoma City. Memphis has two huge guys down low as well, and that's Gasol, Mark, and Zach Randolph. Both those guys are having career years. Zach Randolph especially is going off. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Guy's been unreal. Since they lost Rudy Gay, there was all this expectation that they would take a massive dip and they would fall out of the playoff race with the surging Rockets taking over that spot. It has not been that way at all. Tony Allen, who we mentioned earlier in the show, has been unreal on the defensive end and has picked up his offensive game to some degree. OJ Mayo has been better. Mike Conley has been much better. He's one of those guys that could, when we talk about most improved guys, he's another lottery pick that is excelling finally, that could somewhat get a mention, maybe in a bit of a different year. But I think Memphis, like, they're no one wants to play Memphis. If I'm the Spurs, I'm fearing Memphis. They're young. They're healthy. They're big.
They're not healthy.
Well, mine is gay.
Yeah. Well, at this point, no one in the West is
full
healthy.
Health, yeah.
Is healthy.
Yeah,
everyone's yeah. missing somebody, it seems like. I disagree with you. Memphis, I give them so much credit, so much respect to Zach Randolph, who might be the most underrated player in the league. They've been without Gay for a while. Mayo has had a terrible season by his standards. But
he's played better as of late, though.
For a couple teams here, I just have no faith, because come playoff time, it's about star power. It's about giving guys the ball at the end of games that you know can take you to where you need to go.
Who do you give
Who's
it to
a better
on
power
Memphis?
Forward in the NBA right now than Zach Randolph? Give me two power forwards
would you
that
feel
are really
confident,
better
will,
than him.
Would you feel confident with 10 seconds left designing a play for Zach Randolph to
I
win
really
the game?
I really would. Have you watched Memphis this year? He's been unreal. He can shoot from 15 feet. He can get inside on anybody. I think, and this is going out, I'm going to get chastised for this, but I think he's been the best power forward in the NBA this season.
Blake Griffin.
No, he's been better than Blake. If this guy could jump out of the gym like he can, everybody would be talking about him. He's getting absolutely no respect.
Yeah, but he can't.
The guy's been dominant, and he's a way better defender than Blake Griffin. Like, there's no question about that. It's not even close. It's not even within a mile there. Zebo can shut down just about anybody, and Blake's a sieve.
Listen, I'm not even slightly beginning to compare Chris Bosh to Randolph, because they're completely different players, but with the Raptors in the past, we've seen the danger that lies in having minimal wing talent or minimal talent on the wing and having so much emphasis on your power forward. And at the end
Randolph rebounds, though. He's not close to
the I understand that, but I'm saying at the end of a game, when you need...
Yeah, when you need a shot, you don't want to look to Randolph. When you need a shot... look to Gay.
Exactly.
And he's hurt.
Exactly.
So, yeah. That's okay, what I'm trying to say.
We saw it with the Raptors in years past.
There is no question that you'd rather have Kevin Durant and Kobe Bryant taking shots.
And one of the main reasons is not taking anything away from Randolph. It's so much easier to defend a power forward by doubling than it is somebody on the wing. If you give, like you said, a Kevin Durant the ball way around three, you can't double him.
No.
But if you give the ball to a Randolph at the high post, it's so easy to collapse off the ball on that. And it's such
you don't
a
have to guard
shot.
Tony Allen. You don't really need to guard Marc Gasol. Like and if you need a three, then you're really
humped. So I'm gonna lump a couple teams in here with Memphis, and then with Denver, I feel is the same way. I just don't think that they have enough star power, regardless of how great they've been playing, because they both have been playing great.
I think if they run into Oklahoma City in the first round, they're done. There's no chance.
I think regardless of who either team plays, I think they're done.
Really,
I think
you don't think that Denver could beat Dallas?
No.
No?
I think Denver's done. They just don't have enough star power. I think New Orleans is too inconsistent and not great enough offensively to move
who was
on.
It that they said
and
they wanted
I think
Dallas?
Memphis also not enough star power in the wing positions. The only team out of those bottom four that I can see moving on
is Portland, of course.
What do you know? Kel Shucker.
I didn't pick LaMarcus Aldridge for most improved.
Josh Leuenberg thinks Portland can win a playoff series when he has 100-1 odds on them winning.
Do you think they can win more than one playoff series, maybe?
We'll see.
Could be.
They need Dallas, though. They need Dallas.
I think
in the
Portland's
first round.
All right. Did they call out Dallas? Is that what it was? Who called out Dallas? Somebody did. I can't remember.
Their coach?
Forget it. No, somebody called out Rick Carlisle and said they wanted Dallas.
I still think the most interesting matchup is going to be that middle matchup again.
What, OKC-Denver if it happens?
Oh, if it happens, I think that'll be the one I'm probably looking forward to the most.
Well, yeah, again, there's pretty big... I think the West has more of a steep difference than the East in the fact that the top four teams look a lot more...
And I think OKC is going to be exciting to watch these playoffs. Yeah, this could be a real fun
year
for
them.
Here's
the Kendrick Perkins text. Here's the Kendrick Perkins test.
He's already passed that test.
Take that test.
He's already passed the test.
Take the test, Kendrick Perkins. You got to take the test. You got to prove that you can be a playoff big man. You got to prove that you can shut it down low and be that big stopper. And you know what you really need to do is you need to run into LA and you need to take them to 7 games. Anything less than that's a
failure. And you need to stay out of foul trouble.
Kendrick Perkins could literally take a lawn chair, put it in the middle of the court, sit there the entire game, and make more of a difference than Nenad Krstić, if we're talking about that trade. Kendrick Perkins,
I'll go with that.
On
I'll
attitude that. Alone, on what he brings, on the smack that he was talking before the game, after the game, during the game, which we saw on Sunday night against the Lakers, what he brings is attitude, and no one does it better than Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah, I really do like the attitude. He looks.
Oh, his defensive
presence. He's a
freaky-looking
dude. He's freaky. Like,
he's a terrifying dude.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't want to run into him. I definitely wouldn't
Sipping some lemonade in the middle of the court on a lawn chair.
He makes
and he's still bringing that
he
attitude.
He makes more of a difference down low in OKC when he was playing for Boston than in Nenad Krstić.
I think that was like a mix when he was in Boston of like the most intimidating post player and the least intimidating being beside Big Baby. Because there's no one that's afraid of Big Baby. Dude cried on the bench, like, for real. Like, there's no one's afraid
of
you.
Oh, I laughed so hard when that happened.
Yeah, no one is. So, is it pretty consensus, though? Everybody's got the Lakers coming out of the West, or does anybody have, like...
I had the Lakers from the start of the year coming out of the West, so I'm not going
to... As did I. I'm going to stick to it, but
as long
it will
as
not be
breathes.
Without numerous tests on their part. They will be tested.
And I want to just touch one more time on Coach Popovich, because there's a chance that his Spurs don't lose 20 games this year. And if you look at what's happened to his roster and the tinkering that he's had to do... For him to not even be really getting a lot of this Coach of the Year discussion just goes to the Jerry Sloan thing where, you know, you start to take a coach for granted and you start to just kind of forget about what he's actually doing just because his team's had success over the years.
So our hats off to Coach Popovich.
Our hats off to Coach Popovich, no doubt about it.
At this point, I'm foreseeing, even still, a Spurs-Lakers Western Conference Finals. The only thing that'll be interesting is to see if these younger teams, the Thunder... The Blazers, you got the Nuggets in there as well. You have Dallas, maybe. Can anyone disturb that preconceived Western Conference Finals? We'll see, but I'm very excited. Very excited.
I'm going to go with the upset on that one. I'm going to say Spurs. They get upset. If they draw Memphis in the first round, it's an upset.
Ooh, hater.
Ooh,
stop hating on the Spurs.
It's an upset.
Don't hate on the
down.
Spurs.
Spurs are getting upset. They're hot right now.
Pop's
they go
getting
back
upset.
Into a little bit of a dip. Pop's getting upset. He's getting real mad. He's getting choked up.
George Hill is getting upset.
George Hill. That's a good name, George Hill. Almost Grant Hill. Kind of almost looks like a young Grant Hill.
He looks like Tony Parker.
Yeah, he does. He looks like a taller, like more dinosaurs. Actually, you know who Evan Turner and Tony Parker hybrid. How's that?
for Georgia.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
We talked about Evan Turner way too much.
I know, but I know we talked about him.
Feeling good about this.
Somebody has to. No one else.
Y'all take up pictures of Evan Turner and Tony Parker, and then look at George Hill and tell me that I'm not right in the fact that those two guys are hybrid guys. Anyways, that's been our look at the playoffs, some MVP races handed out. Good show today, guys. Thanks for
yeah, it was pretty good.
Thanks for chilling with
pretty
me.
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good time. Pretty good time.
Hey, see you next week around this time?
Yeah, pretty good time. And then check the rhyme. It's A Tribe Called Quest. Peace.
Peace.
Word. Check the rhyme.
Days on the boulevard I landed. We used to kick routines and the presence was fitting. It was I, the abstract.
And me, the 5-footer. I kicks the mad style, so step off the Frankfurter.
Yo, Fife, you remember that routine that we used to make spiffy like Mr. Clean?
A tidbit, a smidgen. I don't get the message, so you gots to
okay.
Run the pigeon.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
But then grab the microphone and let your words rip.
Now here's a funky introduction of how nice I am. Tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram. I'm like an energizer, cause you see I last long. My crew is never ever whack because we stand strong. Now if you say my style is whack, I swear you're dead wrong. I slay that body and El Segundo, then push it along. You'll be a fool to reply the Fife is not the man. Cause you know and I know that you know who I am. A special shout out piece goes out to all my pals, you see. And a middle finger goes for all you punk MCs. Cause I love it when you whack MCs despise me. They get vexed, I will next, cause none can test me. I'm just a fly MC who's 5'3" and very brave. On top remaining, no home training cause I misbehave. I come correct and full effect of all my holes in check. And before I get the butt, the gym must be a wreck. You see, my aura's positive, I don't promote no junk. See, I'm far from a bully and I ain't a punk. Extremity of rhythm, yeah, that's what you heard. So just clean out your ears and just check the word.
Check the rhyme, check the rhyme.